The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF, your radio home for programs like Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, This American Life, and On the Media. You can find schedules for all of our stations at KUAF.com. And this is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, October 12th, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead on today's show, have you showered today? Used water from the tap to make coffee? Probably. In Northwest Arkansas this past year, more water was used than any other previous year. We'll talk with Larry Lloyd, the COO of the Beaver Water District, about the reason more water was sold. Hint, it's people moving here. First, several nursing students across Arkansas have learned that they're unable to take the state licensing exam because of their federal deferred action for childhood arrival status, or DACA. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek spoke with Sue Tedford, the executive director of the Arkansas Board of Nursing, about a federal law that came to the board's attention earlier this year that prevents DACA nursing students from becoming licensed, which essentially put their nursing careers on hold.
Can you just tell me about the nursing exam that is in question here that some of these students are unable to take?
The nursing exam is called NCLEX, and that is you have to pass NCLEX in order to be licensed as a nurse. None of this stops a graduate from taking the licensure exam because the federal law, DACA, none of that applies to the exam. What stops them from taking the exam is we can't issue a professional license. So our applications for licensure, which the exam is part of that. And since we can't license them, we can't take applications and take their money.
So basically they can't get licensed, so you can't offer them the exam.
In Arkansas, correct.
In Arkansas, okay. So tell me a little bit more about this federal law that's keeping these students from being licensed.
There is a federal law, 1621, that has to do with illegal aliens are not eligible for any state or local public benefit. And you finish reading that, it talks about and it defines what local public benefits are in the law. And it says, part of it says they cannot have a benefit which includes grants, contracts, loans, professional licenses, commercial licenses, and da-da-da-da-da.
Okay. So, so the professional licenses, that falls under that.
Yes.
Category.
So that's the law that stops it. And I think this is why it's never been an issue, because in the past, these are illegal aliens, so they didn't qualify for a Social Security number. And so if you didn't have a Social Security number, we don't license you.
Mm-hmm.
Now with DACA, these individuals qualify for a Social Security number, and so we were not aware that they were DACA waiver individuals because we don't ask immigration status. It's kind of how it all fits in together.
And so how did this kind of come about that the nursing board did realize that perhaps these students did not qualify for a license?
Well, we had an individual early this summer. I was saying mid-summer, but I've gone back to emails, and it was early this summer. It was in early June from Missouri. She graduated from Missouri, and Missouri denied her the ability to be licensed in Missouri because she was a DACA waiver individual.
Mm-hmm.
So she got the bright idea to come to Arkansas, and Arkansas approved her. Because
okay.
She had a Social Security number and she met our criteria. And she mentioned it back to Missouri, and Missouri let us know that y'all are breaking the federal law and brought it to our attention. And so that's what started on when we realized that we were breaking a federal law.
So these students under DACA have a Social Security number, but they still don't qualify under that law. So how are you able to figure out which students are able to be licensed if you only ask for the Social Security number? Do you have to ask for immigration status now?
No, we don't.
Okay. The schools that offer nursing programs in Arkansas were notified about this in some way, or?
I guess the first mass communications that went out to our nursing programs was at their meeting that they held, I believe it was the end of September.
Okay.
I was not at the meeting, so I can't tell you exactly what was said or not said, but they did communicate right. with the program chairs that this had become an issue for a few of the nursing programs.
So basically up until now, there were students who were able to get licensed.
We don't know.
So I read that there are some states that sort of waive that law.
That's what I've read, yes.
So is there anything that can be done about it here? Is that something you guys are looking at, or are you just going to follow the law for now?
Well, for now, that's all we can do. I mean, number one, we have to wait and see what Congress is doing because of all of,
right.
you know, DACA is a big thing in Congress right now with Trump. So we see what the fallout there is. But we have a legislator approached me last week and asked us to look at drafting potential legislation because we can. This allows somehow, and I'm not an attorney and can't quote statute.
Right.
But somewhere the states have the ability to pass a law that gets around this professional licensure piece. So we could look at passing a law that would allow nurses to be licensed, even though they're illegal aliens. But you're looking at 2019.
Right, right. So still quite a bit of time between now and then. Is there going to be any review of the, I don't know how, it sounds like it would be a massive undertaking to review how many students could have possibly had DACA status since 2012 when it was enacted. So is that something that's even on the table, or are you guys just going to kind of?
Well, we don't know of any database that tells us who DACA
right.
individuals are. And from my communication with the governor's office is we're not going to be at this point in time directed to do that.
Okay. Do you have any kind of message to students who are in nursing programs right now who are DACA students? And I don't know, I don't know, how long is nursing school usually take?
Anywhere from 2 to 4 years.
What is sort of your message to those students who maybe are, I don't know, halfway through a program or you know, finishing up? And
well, nothing that'll fix anything, but I mean, we do have great empathy for them. They are caught in a situation that, A, they didn't cause, and it's an unfortunate situation, and we are going to work to do whatever we can to remedy it within the law.
So I guess, can you call this a little bit of an oversight, perhaps, of the law, or was it just a misunderstanding of the law, or what do you guys attribute that to?
We are not required to ask immigration status. It's just like, when you talk to the universities, they're not required to either.
Right,
so
yeah.
They don't know who their DACA recipients are any more than we know or any of the other licensing agencies.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you sort of squeezing me in on your break.
Okay, sure.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
That's Sue Tedford, the executive director of the Arkansas Board of Nursing, speaking with Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek. As Tedford mentioned, last month President Trump ordered an end to DACA, but then urged Congress to pass a replacement before DACA protections are phased out in fewer than 6 months. Congress is now actually left with fewer than 5 months to do that. And just this week, the president released a list of measures he says will have to go hand in hand with any deal that will continue to protect DACA immigrants. The measure includes a border wall, which Democrats have already said is a non-starter. And the president raised some concern this morning when a series of his tweets complained about the infrastructure in Puerto Rico before and after the recent storm. And he suggested FEMA, the military, and first responders might be removed from the American island. Puerto Rico continues to recover from Hurricane Maria, and the Puerto Rico Department of Public Safety reports the majority of the island is still without power. There are several local fundraising events designed to send aid to the island, including bingo at Millwood Christian Church in Rogers tonight and again on October 26th. The church is at 3450 West Pleasant Grove Road. And the University of Arkansas will offer in-state tuition to academically qualified undergraduate and graduate students in Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands who have been displaced from their universities by the damage from Maria. Chancellor Joseph Steinmetz and Provost Jim Coleman made the decision last week to offer these emergency relief awards after consulting with Suzanne McCray, Vice Provost for Enrollment Management, and Dean Kim Needy in the Graduate School and International Education. Ahead on today's Ozarks, art as business. Crystal Bridges, The Momentary, the University School of Art are most often the headlines, but you can find art almost everywhere now.
For instance, just in Bentonville, there's a bank and a commercial real estate office that sell art. And like a commercial gallery, they have openings. One even has kind of a closing reception. They do marketing. And they have a curator that picks the art, and they do a very professional job of displaying it and marketing it. So it's a serious thing, and it's working, apparently.
The attraction for businesses, and not just galleries, to showcase art. That's ahead on today's installment of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report, later on today's edition of Ozarks at Large.
91.3 KUAF is supported by Highlands Oncology Group. Highlands Oncology's cancer specialists provide comprehensive, collaborative care, allowing patients and families to stay close to home. With locations in Benton and Washington counties, Highlands Oncology is helping patients fight the battle every day. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com. Walton Arts Center's 10x10 Arts Series begins this Friday, October 13th at 8 p.m. with Ballet Arkansas's Emergence. The Natural States Professional Ballet Company combines classical and contemporary choreography in a program that will include the regional work Under the Lights by Chris Stewart, set to the music of Johnny Cash. WaltonArtsCenter.org or 443-5600 for tickets.
Join me tonight at the Fayetteville Public Library for a conversation with many of the principals involved with the Theater Squared production, The Champion. The play is about one critical night in the life of Nina Simone, the legendary musical figure. I'll be joined tonight at 6 by Amy Evans, the playwright, Reginald L. Douglas, the director, and Al Shackman, who spent years as Nina Simone's bandleader and as an actual character in the play. The forum begins tonight at 6 in the Walker Community Room at the Fayetteville Public Library. It's free. It's open to the public. And for more information about The Champion, theater2.org.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. The last time we talked with former White House Chief of Staff Leon Panetta, he had some advice for President Trump.
He simply has to change the way he's approaching these issues on Capitol Hill if he's going to have any chance of being able to develop a record.
Leon Panetta will join us once again. That's next time on Here and Now.
Today from 1 to 3 on 91.3. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. The U.S. Department of Education is giving the University of Arkansas a $1 million grant to prepare 36 graduate students in special education and communication disorders to improve transition services for high school students with disabilities, helping them move into workforce or post-secondary education. The grant will last for 5 years and was awarded after the College of Education and Health Professions and the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences put together an interdisciplinary team to apply for the money. The head of an Arkansas legislative body monitoring prisons is less than pleased with the Department of Corrections plans to address a spate of violent incidents and escapes. ADC Director Wendy Kelly told lawmakers yesterday she has some solutions.
One of the things that was listed was to continue the renovation of our existing recreation yards. They were made with chain link fencing, and the inmates were able to pull at the ends of them. We want to add additional security equipment, both in the entrance building and cameras throughout the facilities. We have a lot of cameras now, but there's new technology. There are newer cameras that we only have in a couple of our facilities. We want to add those to the maximum security units.
Kelly also wants to add 400 lockdown cells to isolate inmates. Democratic State Senator Joyce Elliott, the chair of the committee, says she's not too impressed.
I get the impression that a part of the response is just more punishment. And obviously that's not working, because sooner or later, most of these people are going to be back out into society. I would really like to know, what are we doing to help correct behavior when obviously just the threat of punishment is not what's working? I don't have a sense of that at all, and that's frustrating for me.
Department officials say they have over 300 vacancies for correction officers in facilities throughout the state and are plagued by high turnover among new recruits. Lake Bentonville is closed for about a month beginning today. City officials say the closure is to allow lake levels to be drawn down as construction for a future boardwalk takes place. The park is scheduled to be closed for about 1 month. Weather or other unforeseen circumstances could change the timeline. And the Walton Family Foundation's Fellows Program will now have a former chief research officer at the Milken Institute on board. Ross DeVall will study national economic trends that have an impact on the middle of the country. The Walton Fellows Program seeks experts to research, then develop best practices to support the foundation's philanthropic efforts.
The practice of agricultural law can encompass a wide variety of clients and crops or critters.
Most of my clients are row croppers. They grow basic commodities like cotton, peanuts, corn, soybeans, and the like. But I also have clients who raise pecans, blueberries, a lot of vegetable crops. And I have some clients who raise livestock. And that all, you know, the programs may be different and the issues different for different types of crops, but we do some of all.
On the latest conversations with the Academy, we hear from Alan Olson, an agricultural attorney and visiting professor at the University of Arkansas School of Law. You can find the program under the Local and Podcast tab at KUAF.com.
American humorist, comedian, author, and radio contributor David Sedaris returns to Walton Arts Center on Tuesday, October 24th at 7 p.m. Sedaris will read selections from new and unpublished works with his signature deadpan prose. WaltonArtsCenter.org or 443-5600 for tickets.
How about some water? Northwest Arkansas is drinking more of it. About 1 billion gallons more from the area's largest water supplier in fiscal year 2016-17 than the previous year. For the fiscal year ending September 30th, Beaver Water District sold 18.6 billion gallons of water to the cities of Rogers, Springdale, Bentonville, and Fayetteville. That's an increase of more than 6% over the previous year. Seven individual months in the year set all-time records, and not a single record-breaking month was in the summer. The summer, in fact, was cooler than normal. Larry Lloyd, the COO of the Beaver Water District, says the record usage is another indication of the continued population growth of the region.
We sold 1 billion gallons more water in our fiscal year than in September 30th than we did in 2016, which equates to about 3 million gallons per day on average throughout the year. And all of those water sales happened without it being an exceptionally hot and dry summer. So when we looked at that data, we realized that that's just another indicator of the growth in Northwest Arkansas.
Let me break down these totals, because when you start saying millions and billions, it sounds like a lot. Is 1 billion over year to year? That sounds like a major increase, is it?
That is a significant increase, a little over 6% increase from 2016, which had been a record year for us. We continue to see, you know, month by month water sales increasing. So, yes, an additional billion gallons of water is a lot of water, and it is a significant increase for us.
I was looking at the stats for the months that set individual months that set records. And as you mentioned, it was not in the summer. It was in October, November, December of 16, January, February, March, and then September. So we can't say people were watering lawns or because of heat or drought. This is sheer more people going to the tap, right?
That's it. Whenever we looked at the data, it really jumps out at you the fact that the big sales months are not the summer months. Those are not record months. It's those what we would call off-peak or baseline-type months. When you're in January and February, there's not anybody out there watering their yard or filling their swimming pool. So in that particular case, that's once again just an indication that you're selling more water to more people and more businesses in Northwest Arkansas.
It was across the board. I mean, Bentonville was up 11% year-to-year, Fayetteville 5.5%, Rogers 4.5%, Springdale almost 4.5%. So the indication would be people are coming in to everywhere from other places.
Yeah, that's exactly correct. But the fact that each of the four cities that are our wholesale customers saw fairly significant increases, once again, is an indication of just a region-wide impact of more people, more businesses in our area.
Can we do this? Do we have enough water? Can we continue to sell? Like if you and I are talking a year from now and it's a billion over or 6% over this, is that okay?
Yeah, that's a great question. We get that frequently about, you know, where are we with respect to how much water we have. Beaver Water District has a contract with the Corps of Engineers. It actually dates back to before the lake was built. And we have the rights, the storage rights in the lake, that are sufficient to yield on average 120 million gallons a day. And as I said, we sold last year 51 million gallons a day. So we're positioned in a very good place right now to be able to continue this growth for quite some time.
Is this an opportunity to remind people how important it is that Beaver Lake is in good shape?
It really is, Kyle. You know, without that lake, we would not be able to sustain or even marginally support the kind of growth we've seen over the past 20 or 30 years in Northwest Arkansas. It is literally a fantastic resource for us, both from a water supply standpoint, but also from a lot of other economic benefits with respect to recreation and other just environmental benefits. It is an important resource. We do need to protect it. We need to do whatever we can to make sure that resource is there for generations to come.
Besides growth, is there any other sort of out-of-the-box idea of why it might be a billion, or do you think it's strictly because more people are living here?
But, you know, as we evaluated the data, you always look for, is there some other explanation? If we had seen, say, two of the cities with no increases or decreases and the other two with bigger increases, if we had seen from our own internal data the difference between how much water we pump from the lake versus how much we sell to the four cities, there are a lot of different things we looked at to see if we could explain this growth. And when it comes down to it, the only really logical explanation that's out there is that they're just more people buying more water.
And forgive me if this is a naive question, but does growing business or industry have an impact as well?
It does. Certainly, we've got a fairly significant industrial water demand in Northwest Arkansas with our food processors and some other industries. And once again, businesses. Businesses in Northwest Arkansas, as they grow and develop, then there are people, whether it's an office building or retail space, that's also water demand in those places also. So it's just the overall what's happening in Northwest Arkansas, I believe.
Does this at all, the higher demand, the higher sales, make it harder for anyone who works for the water district? I mean, do you have to work longer hours or anything like that?
No, fortunately for us, it doesn't. We man this facility 24 hours a day, 365 days a year anyway, regardless of how much water we sell. And since we have the capability of producing 140 million gallons a day right now, then our plant is not taxed at all. Certainly, it's at a higher rate than the average during the summertime, but even then, it's not really taxed. So we're in great position to continue to sell even more water.
Well, and I bet you're going to.
Well, I would anticipate that we would, and that's why we try to go ahead and build facilities before they're needed so that we're ready for this growth.
Larry Lloyd, thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Kyle.
Larry Lloyd is the Chief Operating Officer for Beaver Water District. The supplier sold more than 18.5 billion gallons in the just completed fiscal year, an increase of more than 6% when compared to the previous fiscal year, a year that was already an all-time record. And it isn't just Beaver Water selling plenty of H2O. The Benton, Washington Regional Public Water Authority, better known as Two-Ton, also had a robust year and is on pace to be within 1% of its biggest water sales year ever.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, rock and roll is hard to resist.
Before he threw the song away, he just left the bass and the drums and my part.
We revisit the stories of the Latinos who helped shape rock music. That's next time on Latino USA.
Latino USA, Saturday afternoon at 3 on 91.3. The Starlight Jazz season at Walton Arts Center opens Saturday night at 8 in Star Theater with the Brooklyn-based band The Hunter Tones. The group has brass, trumpets, saxophones, and trombones, plus guitars, drums, keys, and a beatbox. Their music has solid influences like Charlie Parker and John Coltrane, but it's certainly just as rooted in contemporary music. Dan White, a co-founder of The Hunter Tones, recently talked with Robert Ginsberg host of KUAF's Shades of Jazz every Friday night at 10. Dan told Robert that while the group is now based in Brooklyn, they all met in college at Ohio State University when many of the musicians were still discovering much of what would help them form the music of the Hunter Tones.
Yeah, we were all in music school kind of in different years, and we all came together to start writing some original music, and that's actually where the band name comes from. Is we had a house, an apartment on Hunter Avenue, where we started having some house shows. There weren't many music venues, you know, near the campus, but Ohio State's an enormous school. There's 60,000 students, so we started just, you know, bringing the party to us, and that really is kind of part of the identity of the band.
Oh, I like
social
it.
Music.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, Hunter Avenue, and that's where the apartment where a lot of us lived in different iterations of the band. So, yeah, that's where we got our start.
And this is, you're touring with a 6-piece group.
Yes, sir.
It's kind of a horn-driven group. There's 3 horn players up front with bass, drums, and guitar.
Yeah, that's right. And the typical, you know, instrumentation being, you know, maybe 3 horns and a pianist, but having the guitar certainly kind of serves a little bit more of the sounds that we're going for, which is just a little bit different than your typical, you know, 6-piece kind of jazz group. You know, we in school we were studying the music of Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, you know, with Wayne and Freddie and you know all these unbelievable heroes of ours on in that instrumentation, but. You know, we're taking that and we're kind of going off the deep end in a lot of different directions. And that reflects a lot of the different music that we listen to, you know, from Louis Armstrong to new stuff that's happening today.
It seems like the industry wants to put music into boxes so that they can package it and conveniently deliver it to audiences. You've avoided such stereotyping, really, by including so many styles and influences in your music, as you've already alluded to. Do you feel like this is working to your advantage?
Oh, absolutely. I think versatility is one of our biggest strengths. And I think part of the reason that we've become so versatile is because of the touring that we've done, the situations that we found ourselves collaborating in. And, you know, I think having an open mind about the performance and about the genre and about just music in general and being creative, I think usually gets us out of our comfort zone and usually yields the most interesting and, you know, the best music for us. Time and again, you know, when we're kind of forced to deal and to create something new, we're forced out of our, you know, our typical, you know, ideas. And because of that, I think the best music results from it. So we're kind of hungry for new challenges. And that's why as improvisers, you know, it makes us improvise on a larger scale, you know.
Yes, yes. Well, and, you know, the term jazz, and you're part of the jazz series, and I think it, in spite of the fact that you encompass a lot of different genres, jazz is still right up there at the top. And it's, but it that word carries a lot of baggage, and part of that is the confusion among many as to what it is. I mean, one thing that's undeniable is that jazz has always been a sponge. It's soaked up influences from Tin Pan Alley and show tunes and Afro-Cuban and so forth. Are Hunter Tones part of a new direction, would you say, that includes a new audience for jazz and has helped continuing that tradition of being a sponge?
Absolutely. I think the audience is a huge part of our trajectory and our show. It's a reciprocal thing. You know, we need an audience in order to reach the places that we're trying to go sonically. And give it up, and when we hear, you know, when we hear that you know, it's being received and thrown back at us in a positive way, then we, you know, we have a that boundary is kind of broken down, you know, and we need that. We love that because, you know, we're trying to have a conversation with the audience. We're trying to have conversation with each other. We're always listening to every human being that's in the room, wherever we're performing, or the field, or wherever it ends up being, you know, outside, inside, you know, wherever. And because of that, I think, you know, the accessibility and the story that we're telling, I think, is really important. So I think the attitude in which we come at music is very much the same of a lot of our heroes in jazz music. Mm. And I think jazz music, you know, a lot of people get hung up on, you know, well, is it swinging or is it, you know, I think the state of mind is very much present in all of our music, and in no way do we try and play a cookie cutter show. We try and make every single performance, every single recording, we try and take it as an opportunity, you know, to create and to change something up and to react to how we're feeling both personally and as a group.
I'm always challenged by people less familiar with jazz and its history asking, where is the door for me to enter this music? And for whatever reason, people find it hard to understand, or otherwise they find it intimidating. So one of the things I love about this band, 100 Tone, just kind of kicks these doors open, because it's you're not trying to be purists in the sense of any particular genre. You're just trying to be pure to the music. What were your doors into jazz? And do you think 100 Tone's music could serve that purpose for a new generation of jazz lovers?
My door was going to a Joshua Redman concert when I was 13 with my father. And at this point, he was doing the Elastic Band, which was a, you know, funk outfit a la, you know, Eddie Harris and, you know, all these different, he was kind of going in a different direction for about, you know, 4 or 5 years in the early 2000s. And hearing a saxophonist so charismatically, you know, share his story and original music and lead a band, that was like, I was obsessed from then on with trying to write, trying to, you know, perform and lead a group. And then from then on, you know, I started listening back into the tradition, and, you know, then came Saxophone Colossus, Sonny Rollins, and that blew the doors off me in terms of, you know, what a tenor saxophone can do. And then, you know, got deeper into Parker and Train and, you know, Oscar Peterson Trio. And then, you know, and then in college, and then it expanded into, you know, Stevie Wonder and, you know, all of the more contemporary people that maybe I didn't listen to growing up in my house, but I discovered on my own with the rest of the guys in the band.
What are some of the iconic tracks for you in this body of work with 100 Tone? What are some of the, not necessarily, iconic might not be the right word, for people that have never heard your music, what would you want them to go to first?
I would say out of our in our catalog, Welcome to the Neighborhood is certainly a favorite, because it hits so many different ways that our compositions evolve. You know, it's something like 6 or 7 minutes long, but it goes through so many different iterations of the melody and the themes, and presented by all the musicians on stage. And next up, I would say Camp Town Races, because I feel like that embodies the way that we do covers, which is we roam in a blender.
Well, I'll say.
We do it as, you know, we try and have as much, you know, lean meat of the tune as we can, and then we take as many liberties as we can to make it unique and different and exciting.
That's music from the Huntertones. Dan White, a co-founder of the band, talked with Robert Ginsberg last week. The Huntertones will open the Starlight Jazz season at Walton Arts Center Saturday night at 8 in Star Theater. You can find out more about the show at waltonartcenter.org. And you can hear Shades of Jazz with Robert Ginsberg every Friday night at 10 on 91.3. And you can find out much more about jazz throughout the region and the state at digjazz.com. That's the home of the Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society.
On the next Fresh Air, our guest will be Jimmy Fallon, the host of The Tonight Show. He has a new children's book, his second. We'll talk about being a father, hosting The Tonight Show, dealing with politics and tragedies on the show, and the injury that nearly ripped off his finger and left him in the ICU for 10 days. Join us.
Fresh Air at 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 91.3 KUAF. The Arkansas Razorback soccer team is doing something familiar tonight, playing away from home. For the fourth time in the last six contests, Arkansas is on the road. The Razorbacks face LSU in Baton Rouge tonight. Arkansas enters the game 2-3-1 in conference play, 7-7-1 overall. The John Brown University soccer teams are idle until Saturday, but they'll play a doubleheader at Alumni Field in Siloam Springs. Then the women play at 4 Saturday. The men follow at 6. And the JBU volleyball team is next in action tomorrow night in Chickasha, Oklahoma, against Science and Arts of Oklahoma. The Arkansas volleyball team is in Fayetteville tomorrow night, hosting South Carolina at 7 in Barnhill Arena. Arkansas has dropped 4 of its last 5 matches. And the University of Arkansas Fort Smith basketball teams host Midnight Madness tonight in Fort Smith. The open-to-the-public first preseason practice of the year doesn't actually start at midnight tonight. Rather, a bit earlier at 7 p.m. The session at Stubblefield Center is free.
Ukulele player and performer Jake Shimabukuro returns to Walton Arts Center Wednesday, October 18th at 7 p.m. Hawaiian-born, Jake has played since the age of 4, developing a style and talent that has drawn comparisons to Jimi Hendrix and Miles Davis. WaltonArtsCenter.org or 443-5600 for tickets.
Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, Songs with a History.
I do love shortening bread. I do love shortening bread. Everybody loves shortening bread. I do love shortening bread.
Sugar on the Floor sings in the Furman Garner Performance Studio tomorrow at noon and 7 on 91.3 KUAF.
A construction project worth more than $100 million is now underway in Benton County. This is the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. I'm Paul Gatling. Last spring, we reported on Walmart's plans to build a new distribution center about 5 miles southwest of its headquarters on Walton Boulevard. That project is now underway. The Whiting Turner Construction Company has received a building permit from the city of Bentonville valued at nearly $111 million. The Baltimore-based contractor is using it to build the 1.27 million square foot distribution center at 5800 Southwest Regional Airport Boulevard. The site is across the highway from the existing Walmart Distribution Center, which opened about 20 years ago. The new building will include a little more than 1 million square feet of warehouse space, 216,000 square feet dedicated to shipping operations, and about 16,000 square feet of office space. The project will also include 475 parking spaces for employees and a little more than 1,000 trailer parking spaces. Walmart spokeswoman Ann Hatfield said there was no set timetable to have the facility completed. You can keep up with that story and other Walmart headlines at nwabusinessjournal.com and at our sister website, talkbusiness.net. This is the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Northwest Arkansas has been working overtime in recent years to beef up its cultural offerings. Bentonville, in particular, is developing into a tourist destination for art lovers. And while there are no commercial art galleries in the local arts ecosystem, there is no shortage of art for sale in Northwest Arkansas, as several non-art businesses and retailers are exhibiting and selling art. It's the subject of a story in the current issue of the Business Journal. And as reporter David Conrads explains, art is becoming a serious sideline for several non-art businesses, and not in venues one would expect.
What's evolved, which has been kind of interesting, is as you said, businesses that are not in the art business per se, retail businesses that have gotten into it as a serious sideline. For instance, just in Bentonville, there's a bank and a commercial real estate office that sell art. And like a commercial gallery, they have openings. One even has kind of a closing reception. They do marketing. And they have a curator that picks the art, and they do a very professional job of displaying it and marketing it. So it's a serious thing, and it's working, apparently. So, all the places that I interviewed have been successful in selling art.
And so when you talk to these business owners, you mentioned there's a bank and commercial real estate and a coffee shop and just other commercial ventures. What is their motivation for getting in on the art scene? Is it for the money? Is it a way to add a revenue stream to their own business or something else?
Well, that's an interesting question. It's varied a good bit. For instance, I talked to a woman that owns a hair salon in Fayetteville, and she got into it because she simply needed art for her walls. When she redid the house she operates her business out of, she ran out of money before she got around to decorating. And she wasn't really going at it as a money-making thing, but she was interested in the arts and wanted to support the arts. And so she invited artists she knew to display, and if they could sell their art to do that also. But now it's evolved into a pretty significant piece of her overall business. But other businesses, I know, for instance, the bank in Bentonville, the real estate office, I know the coffee shop that I talk about. It really was not a money making thing. In fact, the real estate office is barred from by real estate law from deriving any financial gain. So it's really just it's more community building. They want to support the arts. They want to support downtown Bentonville. And so that's why they get into it. And I think the coffee shop is similar. It's kind of about bringing people with an interest in the arts together and also supporting the artists who in most cases don't really have an abundance of venues to display their work.
So from your perspective, I guess the benefit to these businesses and these business owners is bringing together like-minded people and people who have an affinity for art and are interested in the arts ecosystem here and growing that community in Northwest Arkansas.
Oh, yes, very, very very much so. And the other piece of it too is really sort of educating the public in general about the joys and the opportunities of buying and collecting art. You don't have to be wealthy to collect art. Some of these venues show art. Some of it's priced below $100. Most of it's probably a little bit more than that. But many of them have works of art that are between, say, $200 and $600, and it goes up quite a bit higher. But I think through all these different activities, the openings and just exposing people to art, I think they're seeing it as sort of paving the way for maybe the day coming when a commercial gallery, a full-time commercial gallery, could actually make it financially. So that's the other part of it, in addition to the sort of community building.
Yeah, and talking about those, an art gallery and the prospects for that, what does that look like? What are the barriers that you hear that are really have to be overcome? I think you got some differences of opinion when you asked that question. Will Northwest Arkansas ever support a commercial art gallery?
That's true. I think most people see the day when, at some point, when Northwest Arkansas could have a commercial gallery, or even a number of them, to have what might even constitute a gallery scene. I think the barriers, what's needed is people with disposable income and an interest in buying art. And there's certainly more and more wealth in the area, and there really has been for a number of years. But there's no real significant history of collecting on the part of the residents. There are people with collections, and there might be, there no doubt are collectors that aren't maybe necessarily well known to the public. The suspicion is that they probably buy their art. I mean, no doubt they buy their art other places, New York, Chicago, even places like Santa Fe, Aspen, Colorado, which have well-known and developed gallery scenes. But then some people I talk to think the time is right now that now could be the time for someone to open a gallery. It would certainly take someone with deep pockets and some patience, because it's unlikely to really click right away, as many businesses don't. You need some time to develop it, and it would certainly take someone with some patience to really get a feel for what might sell, and be willing to kind of nurture the market until people get a feel for or accept Bentonville or Northwest Arkansas as a place to buy art. But there's certainly no shortage of also visitors, art interested visitors coming to town, which could be certainly part of a burgeoning gallery scene.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. More at ArkansasStateChamber.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas, and it shows in your banking experience. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. That's because First Security is 100% focused on serving customers all across the state and nowhere else. It's local banking with local commitment. First Security. Bank better. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender. And OneCom. OneCom, providing voice and data solutions that adapt to today's demand with tomorrow's technology. Communication tools that integrate mobility with the desktop and merge wired networks with the wireless technology. More at one-comm.com or 479-715-8800.
In the upcoming issue of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, we'll have a breakdown of the FDIC's Summary of Deposits report released last week. Federally insured deposits held by banks in the six-county area of Northwest Arkansas, that's defined as Benton, Washington, Madison, Carroll, Sebastian, and Crawford counties, totaled $14.73 billion as of June 30th this year. That represents just about 23% of bank deposits held in the entire state.
And that's today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report. Remember, you can follow our daily reporting online at nwabusinessjournal.com and at talkbusiness.net. I'm Paul Gatling. Thanks for listening.
This is Ozarks at Large on 91.3. We have final numbers now from the fundraiser. That was the last part of an entire fundraising month last month. You might remember the last 5 days, Monday through Friday, was our on-air fundraiser. Well, Lee Wood, our membership director, has now tabulated everything that came in. Our goal was $150. Well, counting every dollar that came in during September, including a car donation of $269, we raised $145,527. Not bad. And still time for you to make a contribution. You can do so easily right now at supportkuaf.com. Thanks to everyone who contributed. And if you're about to, thank you too.
Gettysburg National Military Park has the largest number of Confederate monuments in the country. The statues honor the sacrifices of soldiers who fought there, but many go further.
The inscription says, "On this ground our brave sires fought for their righteous cause." And I think we need to ask, was their cause righteous?
The Battle Over Gettysburg, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Beginning at 3 today on 91.3. And a service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Knoll, Missouri. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. Thanks so much for listening. Back tomorrow, noon and 7, with a brand new edition, a Friday edition, like I mentioned just a few minutes ago, Sugar on the Floor, and much more on tomorrow's show. And don't forget, weekend Ozarks at Large, every Sunday morning at 9, when we play some of our favorite stories and interviews of the previous week. You can find out much more about us at ozarksatlarge.com or KUAF.com. We'll end with music from Handmade Moments, great friends of the show. They will be playing at the Hillberry Harvest Moon Festival on the farm in Eureka Springs, Sunday afternoon, scheduled to start at 2:50. And if you can't see them there, a couple of other opportunities in October. They'll be in Eureka Springs at Chelsea's Corner Cafe and Bar on October 27th, and at Smoke and Barrel in downtown Fayetteville on October 28th. I'm Kyle Combs. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great rest of your Thursday.
Nothing but want your eyes and never there on me. Want your eyes, do you love me? With your cold, blank stare. She's got eyes that can look right through me, but doesn't even know that I'm there. Doctor says she's got 20/20. She reads every word on that sign. When I try to meet my baby's eyes, her wandering eyes are never set on mine. Wandering eyes, do you love me? With your cold, blank stare. She's got eyes that can look right through me, but doesn't even know that I'm there. Never lost a blinking contest. She keeps her eyes wide open in a storm. She will stare directly at an eclipse. Neither of her retinas ever burn. Wandering eyes, do you love me? With your cold, blank stare. She's got eyes that can look right through me, but doesn't. Wandering eyes, do you love me? With your cold, blank stare. She's got eyes that can look right through me.